New York Jets beat writer and columnist for the New York Daily News. I cannot believe this is only the first time on the show. Antoine Staley joins us. Is this really actually only the first time?
I think so. Yeah, I've talked to other people on the network, but not you. I don't think we've done a show. We spoke obviously several times, but just never officially done, been on like with you. So it's good to finally be on after a few years.
And that is on me. That is totally on me. And I didn't realize it until I was like looking up notes, and I was like, I've never had him on before. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. But hey, better late than never.
All right, or never late is better. That's what Drake said. So,
Yeah.
okay, Antoine. So we'll start here. Your draft guide for the 2026 New York Jets is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I go. I hate giving draft grades, but
I
since
know.
people ask me, I give it like a B plus because I think like they hit on a lot of different needs there. Bailey Reese, I mean, there's been some debate about that. It'll still be debate about that, especially with Reese being a giant now. So they're gonna be linked to each other for the next 4 or 5 years. But David Bailey, you can say whatever you want to, but productive pass rusher, led the nation in sacks last year. Should be a good quality player the Jets have, especially on the other end of Will McDonald. And I think it's somebody they believe they can come in and produce immediately, as opposed to Arvell Reese, who is somebody that may take a little bit longer. He's 20 years old. Bailey is 22, about to turn 23. So yeah, I think they want instant production, and I think that's kind of the reason why they end up taking Bailey. And then you look at their other picks with Sadiq and Cooper. And Sadiq was a little bit puzzling at the time, although I knew they were interested in him. But to go get Cooper back in that late first round too, as well, I feel like that was a big move for them, and I think they have as much firepower as I've seen in a really long time in any kind of Jets roster.
Yeah, and I actually thought Bailey over Reese too, and just the age and the maturity level of it all, and playing in New York City, and just plug and play, and I thought he'd be a good match also opposite of Will McDonald. Is that what ultimately po pushed the Jets for Bailey over Reese, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and just that instant production where you're not waiting on somebody that was, think about Reese is he played a lot of off-ball linebacker at Ohio State, played some edge rusher, but not necessarily full time. So, but it's going to be a little bit of a transition. Like if he were to do that, I think the Giants plan on using him more as the off-ball linebacker, which is probably more his strength there. And I think he's going to come in and produce instantly there because this is a position he's accustomed to, as opposed to Bailey where. He's just a pure pass rusher. And, I think the one thing about Bailey that I do worry about is just the run defense too as well. But the Jets have surrounded both him and Will, who kind of, struggle at times at run defense there with other players on the team. That's more their strength. So they might be okay in that area.
Now we're talking about Daily News is Antoine Staley on the Fan. Yeah, you mentioned Sadiq. I know the mismatch that he presents for defenses, but why did the Jets like him over who I thought other than Tate? I thought Mekhi Le Lemon was a great wide receiver. Why did they like Sadiq over Lemon?
Because his versatility. I mean, he can line up at the slot, like Mekhi Lemon would probably do too as well. You can line him up as an inline tight end traditionally. And he also a great blocker too, down, which is very rare for a college guy to come out there and be one of the best blockers in the nation. Yeah, you look at more guys like, maybe fullback or offensive lineman or traditional tight end that's just solely a pure blocker. But he's a guy that can really do it all. He can stretch the defense there with his speed and athleticism. Really tough guy to bring down too as well. And then on top of it, he willingness as a blocker too as well. And also, just the different matchups Frank Wright loves to kind of utilize with the tight end position. And it gives you, a flexibility to kind of use some 12 and 13 personnel with Mason Taylor and also Jeremy Rucker too as well. So to get those guys along with Garrett, and now you have A.D. Mitchell and obviously Cooper, Omar Cooper too. I think it's gonna be a lot more things that defenses have to figure out when they're playing against the Jets, as opposed to like last year, where you really just had Garrett, and even at times you didn't have Garrett, especially him missing 10 games. You really didn't have that viable threat that could really pose a threat on defense.
I'm not trying to rain on the parade, but the concern I have about Sadiq is this: 21.2 yards per game with the Ducks, and a lot of people, Antoine, on the internet, a lot of people want to point to, oh, well, the Ducks have a lot of depth. But I looked into it. Sadiq was the second most productive pass catcher for them, and their leading wide receiver from last season went in the sixth round, and that's it from this draft from a pass catching standpoint for the Ducks. So, I just think that. And I hope that the Jets can utilize him because they're going to need a lot more than just 21.2 yards per game from a 16th overall pick.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think in addition to that, I think you worry about the drops too. He had like six drops, I believe, last year, and that's a lot, especially from the tight end position where you're catching like maybe like 40 to 50 balls. So yeah, that's something that area he needs to clean up there too as well. But I think in addition, like he won't be asked to do a whole lot with the Jets too, because they have other people that can take some pressure off of him, like a Garrett, assuming he's gonna be back and healthy too. And now you got Omar Cooper Jr., who is one of the best wide receivers in the country for a team that won the national championship. And oh yeah, like again, you have Mason Taylor there. A.D. Mitchell's still a guy that's still developing too as well. I think he'll be a big time option, especially as a speed threat down the line on the outside too. So he won't, the good thing about it is he won't be asked to be the playmaker. He'll be asked to be a playmaker for the Jets.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to allude to. I'm glad you answered it that way. Antoine Stanley is with us on the fan. Okay, talk me out of not loving this Omar Cooper trade up because what the scout said, average contested catch rate, and more important for me, we talked about the willingness to be a blocker. They said disappointing effort and physicality when asked to run block.
Yeah, I mean, I think the run blocking is a little bit questionable too as well. But you know, I love his physicalness. I love how tough he is there. He's not necessarily gonna run past defenders, but he's somebody that's kind of like a Jarvis Landry type of guy player that played for the Dolphins, who I covered him with Miami, and that's kind of reminds me of somebody that's not is gonna get yards at the catch. And I know we talked about a lot of that with Malachi Corley a few years ago there, but I feel like Cooper is a little bit more of a polished finished product than Corley was at that juncture. And Cooper played against better competition, let's be honest, too, as well. So you also have to factor that in. But yeah, I think he's a guy that's gonna get you those tough, tough yards. Like if you need a yard, you need third and one, he can get you that yard on the third down, or if you need 5 yards, he can get you that too as well. He's not gonna burn you, but you have other players that can also stretch the defense too as well. And Garrett, A.D. Mitchell, Cooper, they all kind of do different things. And I do like that. I do like that there are different type of receivers, and I think that again poses definitely problems for opposing defenses too as well when you have different receivers with different attributes.
Sure. Antoine Staley, New York Jets beat reporter and columnist for New York Daily News, joins us. A lot of times these draft classes are made, quote unquote, made at like the back end of the draft. So which of the late round picks from the Jets do you think is going to be most impactful on this team?
Oh, I think from an instant standpoint, it'd probably be a guy like Darryl Jackson Jr., because I think he's a guy that they struggled in run defense last year. So they were 29th in that area. They made some moves in free agency and now the draft to kind of solidify that and improve that area. But he's a guy 6'5", 315. Plug him up the middle. Again, you already have Sweat, who you added in from the Jermaine Johnson trade too. You still have Juwan Briggs and Harrison Phillips. Much better unit inside than I think it was last year, and now you add a guy that's a big plug and play guy, not necessarily a big sack guy, but he's there to stop the run. And 6'5", 315, he's a guy that's very hard to move, and I think he's the guy that can come in and not necessarily make an immediate impact in terms of sacks, but as far as tackles for losses, that I think he's the guy that's going to play a lot early.
6'5". I wonder what the wingspan
I saw it, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, he's a huge guy. He's a very huge human. And that's what you want in the middle of your defense.
Yeah. Sort of a sarcastic question here. Can D'Angelo Pons intercept the football, or are we going to look at another year with no interceptions?
No, I doubt that's gonna happen. Well, just for a variety of different reasons, but that was probably the pick I loved the most, because I think he was one of the best players out the Big Ten. I think the only reason he was a second round pick because of his size. Like he's a 5'9" guy, like 175, 180. He not very big. A lot of people compared him to Aaron Glenn, which is very good comparison as far as like, the physical attributes there. But tough, scrappy guy, loves to mix it up with tall, bigger defenders. And he's a willing, run tackler too as well. Like he loves to get in the midst of everything. And the one thing that Darren Mooji kind of pointed out when we asked him on Saturday, or that's Friday or Saturday, I can't remember which one it is, basically said he asked a lot of receivers who the best corner they played against, and it was Pons for a lot of the answers. And even Sadiq, he kind of praised him too as well, his coverage skill. So I think he's going to be a guy that's going to come in, make an instant impact, and also pick off some interceptions, especially for a Jets team that only had three turnovers at all defensively last year, which is just hard to fathom.
I mean, yeah, catastrophically, historically bad. So hopefully, things are looking up on the defensive end there.
They can't get much worse than that. Like, no interceptions and three turnovers. Like, that was the least in the league by far. So you have to improve. You're gonna go up from there.
And I'm thinking, like, can't Aaron Glenn jump in on a defensive drill and just show them how to jump a route on the secondary? Like, get in there and mix it up and help these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's trying, but he's also 50 years old, so it's kind of a little bit different as opposed to him being a little bit younger. So, but I'm sure he's found ways to try to get those guys off. And so then, yeah, it was just colossal like failure on that part last year. But I have a hard time believing that would happen again, and that's why you go out and get a guy like Ponce who makes a living off going to get interceptions. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see the Jets get a just kind of how things are. I wouldn't be surprised to see them get an interception week one against whoever they play.
Let's go. Okay, Antoine, we mentioned the head coach here, and I just, as I'm watching the picks go, and I'm like, all right, yay, that's good, but I just, in this insidious thought in the back of my mind, like, this is all being built with, like, in my opinion, at least I think major uncertainty, but at the very little, just uncertainty at the head coach position. What if Glenn is gone after this season?
Well, I think Muji would still stay in that case too, as well. I mean, they know what it is. That's why partly I think they end up drafting guys that were proven commodities coming out of college too. It's also guys that are part of winning programs. Because if you're part of a winning program, obviously the Jets have not been a winning program for a really long time too, as well. Like, you can bring in that possible secret sauce that made everything work, whether it be at Oregon or Indiana or Texas Tech, and then maybe kind of build your own foundation here with the Jets too, as well, in addition to what already Aaron Glenn is bringing in. But they understand what they know. Like, nobody's saying the Jets have to make the playoffs. Like, I don't think anybody's going in this year saying that. But it has to look better than what it did last year when you're getting blown out by 23 points or more in your last five games. Like, it just cannot look like that at all. I think they are a team that can win six or seven games. Maybe the ceiling is eight, depending on how Geno Smith is playing. I think that's going to be a bit factor too as well. But one thing I will say is this: in addition to coaching, like, quarterback is still a question too. They're really building their team around the quarterback position without actually having a long-term solution. So I'm curious to see how that all works out. And I think they're doing a good job of it. Like, they're just going to try to insert a quarterback with as much talent as possible and hoping that guy can come in and be a difference maker in 2027.
Well, my next question was going to be, what guardrails are in place to assure everyone, including Grandpa Manning, placating him, that the Jets can actually pick and develop a rookie quarterback? Because we've seen the best example, Sam Darnold, Super Bowl winning outside of the organization. So, what are the guardrails in place that they can point to and say, hey, look, Grandpa Manning, don't skip the pick with us. We can do it.
Well, I think part of that is like building a great offensive line, which I think they already have a really good offensive line in place. You got two bookend tackles and Olofashinu and also Bilu as well. They also have Garrett Wilson still on the roster. We'll see what happens with Breece there. They're still kind of trying to work on the contract situation there. But even if you like lose Breece, you can bring in another running back. They can also factor into that as well. But yeah, I mean, again, with the weapons that they have, it's Sadiq Cooper, obviously Garrett Wilson, Mitchell, and then just the whole talent around them as well. And also the coaching staff too. That's why you bring in a guy like Frank Reich, who can be an experienced head coach that can also get the ground running too for wherever that rookie quarterback is. So I think the foundation is a lot better than what it was even just a year ago. If let's say Arch Manning came out in 2026, like, I think you'd be a little bit more hesitant, especially coming out for the season that they had, as opposed to now with all the talent that they've accumulated recently, and rather be free agency and also the draft.
Sure. And New York Daily News is Antoine Staley is with us on the fan. And, if that is the plan, if Arch Manning is the plan, I think Jets fans would jump on that in a heartbeat. So then I guess my question is, what is the thought process and thinking behind trading up 18 spots and essentially wasting a pick on Cade Klubnik?
Well, basically, you need a development guy. Like, they're going to always take a quarterback. It's just a matter of that was the reason they kind of gave them a B plus instead of an A, because not only did they trade up to get Klubnik, like, they actually drafted him in a guy that really struggled last year, especially you compare his 24 season to his 25. A lot of factors were the reason for that. Obviously, injury. He had some injuries he was dealing with too. Clemson was kind of, falling and derailing it on his own too, especially Dabo Swinney. There's been a lot of questions surrounding him. He wasn't the only Clemson player that kind of had a down year too. I think you saw a guy like Peter Woods, who was projected as a first round pick, actually ended up sliding because of that too as well. But you get a guy that's super talented, five star athlete, player of the year in the state of Texas too. Had a really good 24 season leading Clemson to the ACC championship. And I think your thinking is at worst, like he can be our backup quarterback to whoever we draft in 27. At the best, like let's say you hit gold, like maybe he can be that, guy that you see, they can be their long-term solution, or at least push whoever you potentially draft next year too as well. So I don't think it's necessarily a worst thing in the world. I just think it's a bad look. The optics are bad when you trade up for a guy that struggled as much as what he did last year.
Yeah, and I was looking at all the other quarterbacks that were off the board prior to him. Drew, is it LR from Penn
Drew
State?
Aller, yeah,
LR,
Carson
yeah.
Beck.
Out of those guys, like, do you think that they landed with an okay guy like in Klubnik? I don't know.
I don't I, personally, I'm gonna tell you this. I don't really like any of the quarterbacks outside of Fernando Mendoza this upcoming
Right.
year. But I guess if you were gonna take one, like mine would have been like Torian Green from Arkansas, somebody that has a little bit more mobility and, athletic ceiling, as far as that concerned. But all these guys had questions, so I was not a big fan of taking any of the quarterbacks. But I knew they were gonna take one. So, you at least get a guy that's had proven it on a college level, even though he struggled his final season there. So, yeah, I can't totally fault it, but again, it's just the fact that they traded up to get him. They gave him two picks to grab him. So, and I don't know if they necessarily needed to.
Final question here is because I know Frank Reich likes those guys that are big, strong guys, pocket passers. Would that fit the description of Klubnik?
He can move around a little bit. He's not a total pocket passer, but yeah, he doesn't. He's limited as far as his athleticism, but he can move when he has to. But so I wouldn't totally call him a classic pocket passer. I would call him more of a modern day pocket passer, where you see guys that, because you got to be able to move at some level, like nowadays, especially the way the NFL is constructed. So I would say he's more of a modern day pocket passer who can move when pressure's coming his way.
Yeah, okay. All right. Just want to clear that up. All right. Well, Antoine, thanks so much for carving out some time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully the Jets, I mean, like you said, it can't get any worse this season.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that is that. I'd say defensively, it can't get much worse. But,
Okay.
they won three games, so we can get worse. Well, we just hope it does not.
Yes, we are hoping for that as well because it was miserable on the radio with both teams doing so poorly, but the Jets doing so extra poorly. Like it was like it's not fun when they're losing. So hopefully for both teams, it's a better year this year, just for all of us.
Yes, for seriously, like a bit better football for all of us. Like, hopefully, cross off. Keep our fingers crossed.
Yes, and fingers crossed. All right, Antoine, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.